Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's February 2018, and you're listening to episode 59 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Natasha Crane. Natasha is a speaker, writer, and blogger, and she's the author of two apologetics books for parents called Keeping Your Kids on God's Side and her recent book, Talking with Your Kids About God. Natasha has an MBA from UCLA and a certificate in Christian apologetics from Biola University. And Natasha has written a feature article for the volume 41, number one issue, and it's called Kindergartners Need Apologetics Too. Natasha, it's good to have you on.
Hi, Melanie. Thanks so much. It's great to be on with you.
So a lot of people think that apologetics is something that little kids don't need or they can't grasp, you know, kind of apologetic issues or arguments. And so it's something that you start in middle school or high school. But you say that kids should start learning apologetics in elementary school or even younger. Why is that?
Well, I think you're right. Most people do, if they know about apologetics, they think of it as kind of this very complicated thing that kids can only grasp when they get a lot older. And I think when people think of it that way, that they're defining it very narrowly, and they're thinking specifically about defending the faith against some complex issues like science issues or evolution, things like that. But in reality, apologetics is just as much about being able to make a case for the faith and explaining why there's good reason to believe Christianity is true. And I think especially from that perspective, that's something that every parent should embrace the opportunity to raise their kids to understand from the earliest age. So as soon as you're talking about Jesus when your kids are 3 or 4 years old, and you're telling them about how much God loves them and God created them, that should go hand in hand with, and here's how we know that God exists, and here's how we know that God loves you. And I think sometimes we assume, especially if we've been lifelong Christians ourselves, that kids are just going to immediately understand that and they're going to grab onto it. But that's not necessarily the case. And so we should welcome the opportunity to say, here's why we believe that Christianity is true, how we know that Jesus really came back from the dead, how we know that the Bible is true. All those questions are important to kids from an early age. And also along the lines of defending the faith, it's not just against these complex issues that come up when kids are teens, but this happens even when kids are very little. My kids are at a private Christian school, and even there we have families who maybe one parent is a Christian and one parent isn't. And so kids have very different views. And my kids have been told on the playground, well, I don't believe that God exists, or, you know, the Bible has fairy tales in it, so I don't believe it. So both from proactively making the case from an early age, because we should want them to be able to do that, and from defending the faith against some just very basic challenges, we should want to raise our kids with that understanding from kindergarten and on up.
I know I've said on this podcast before that my oldest, who's now 21, when he was younger and he was even 3 years old, he was actually asking astute questions about the Trinity. So I know that really, even really young kids can, you know, if you're telling them something about God, can kind of formulate that and try to figure out a question, and they'd like to ask why a lot. So what are some of the most common, like, faith questions that younger kids ask that are connected to apologetics in some kind of way?
Well, I think based on my own experience, but also based on hearing from so many parents through my blog and my writing, I think the very biggest one is, how do we know God is real? It's something that so many kids ask from the youngest age, you know, how do I know God is actually there? And I think it's interesting, because a lot of times I'll say on my blog's Facebook page, okay, you know, make this a night where you go and you ask your kids what questions they have about God or Jesus, faith, anything, and then come back and share what their questions were. And this is true across the board, from young kids to older kids. The number one question that comes back is, how do we know God is actually there? And that's very much an apologetics question. And unfortunately, a lot of parents are kind of surprised by that. And they say, wow, I didn't even know that my child was wondering about that. They seem so engaged at church, and they seem to talk about God all the time. But yet, as soon as I asked them, this was kind of on the tip of their tongue. And, you know, too many times, I think parents go to, well, because we've experienced experienced God, and you know, we know God's there because we feel Him. And while those kinds of answers can be really important to us personally and in explaining our own testimony and our personal experiences, we have to be able to point our kids to something outside of ourselves, that objective evidence for God's existence. And so that really gets into the area of apologetics. And the other big question, I think, is how do we know the Bible is true? You know, like I mentioned, that the child in my son's class who said, you know, the Bible has all these fairy tales in it. Like, do you really think that all this stuff happened? Do you really believe in Noah's Ark? And do you really believe in Jonah and that Jesus came back to life? And, you know, for a child who reads a lot of books at that age where you're talking about magical things and fairy tales and all these kinds of ideas, it's hard for them to grasp, well, why is that different than what we hear in the Bible? And so being able to have those conversations with our kids to explain how the Bible and the miracles in the Bible are in a completely different category than fairy tales is fundamental for their faith. And as they get older, they'll just hear more and more in terms of skeptics saying, you know, the Bible is just like a fairy tale. And so we can start to really help them with that understanding from an early age to explain the nature of miracles and why that is something that is totally different than reading about, you know, the magic princess books.
So let's say a parent has a child that's 5 or 6 years old or in kindergarten, and they want to begin teaching them the basics of apologetics. Where should they start?
Well, I think that question, the answer to that is similar to the question, if you want to teach your kids anything, where do you start? You start with yourself, because you cannot teach what you don't understand. And that's not to say that a parent has to be an expert in any way, but a parent has to be willing to get equipped with some of those basics and read an introductory level apologetics book, if you're new to it, for example, to just have it on your radar of what the big questions are so that you can identify those opportunities to bring the subjects up. And I always think of this in terms of a two-pronged approach. I think of it in terms of using teachable moments and then creating moments. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of opportunities once you start understanding apologetics and you see what those issues are to integrate that kind of understanding into daily life. So say you're watching a movie with your kids and, you know, the whole focus of the movie is on, you know, following your heart, for example. Well, that's an opportunity to stop, pause the movie and talk about that and talk about, well, you know, how does that impact your worldview? And what does it mean to follow your heart versus following God and God's objective truth? And where is our source of authority? You know, those are just kind of some basic kinds of conversations that you can begin to have even with young kids. And so those are the kinds of things that you can take advantage of with teachable moments. But then aside from that, there are a lot of things that don't just happen to come up in daily life that make for this nice and tidy teachable moment. We also have to create the moments. In other words, we have to be willing and able to bring up a conversation about things that didn't just happen. So what I emphasize for parents is to think about that in terms of the four big questions of apologetics. So what evidence is there for God's existence? Do all religions point to the same truth? What evidence is there for the resurrection? And how do we know the Bible is reliable? Those are four big questions that you can use as a framework, whether your kids are in kindergarten or whether they're in high school or the rest of their lives. And you can begin by just teaching your kids one basic thing about God's existence and the evidence for God's existence. And then you go through those four questions and you continue building on that over time. So I think it's just really important to emphasize that you don't have to be an expert in apologetics to help your kids understand this, and they don't have to be experts in order for you to feel like they're actually learning what you would hope that they would learn.
So if you are trying to start out and, you know, teach your kids, especially smaller kids, apologetics, what should your expectation be about how much children at that age even understand about apologetics?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And sometimes parents get very frustrated because especially if they happen to be into apologetics themselves and they're really passionate about it and they start kind of laying it on thick with their young kids because they want them to be apologists and philosophers, and they get frustrated easily because the kids aren't quite getting it. And I think it's just really important to keep the perspective that kids learn at all different rates and they learn in different ways. And just like with school, we have to find the best ways for them to learn the information that they need to learn. So there's not one standard thing that we can say, okay, every kid at, you know, age five needs to be able to understand the cosmological argument, for example. It doesn't have to be like that. I think that we should have kind of a framework, just like in an academic setting, we have a curriculum, and that would go back to those four questions that I mentioned before, but how much they're going to understand and be interested in at each age is going to differ. The important thing is that we're building over time. And I would also say that, you know, a lot of times we have lowered expectations of our kids and we think that they can't understand very much. And that's also not true. You know, just to give one example, I remember when I first tried to explain the cosmological argument to my twins when they were in kindergarten, and just explaining, you know, the universe had a beginning and things that begin to exist have a cause. That means the universe had a cause. And we were talking about what that means. And, you know, they kind of seemed like they got it, but I really didn't know what they got out of it. And the next week, my younger daughter, she was outside and she let go of this balloon. And the balloon is, you know, flying up into the sky. And she says, oh, it's going to heaven. And my son, who was in kindergarten, he kind of rolled his eyes at her inside and he said, you know, don't you know that God is outside of space and time? And I was so surprised because I didn't know how much he had picked up. But when we talked about the cosmological argument, we were talking about how, you know, if the cause created space and time and matter, that cause had to be outside of space and time and it had to be immaterial. So even at 5 years old, that's an example of what a child can pick up. And will every child understand the same things? Absolutely not. But the more that we introduce them to these ways of thinking, the more that they grab onto it as they grow.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Natasha Crane. Natasha has written a feature article for the Volume 41, Number 1 issue, and it's called Kindergartners Need Apologetics Too. To read her article, please subscribe to the journal. And I have some great news. We have a new lower subscription rate. It's only $33.50 now instead of $39.50 for a 6-issue subscription. So to subscribe online, visit equip.org. Well, one thing you were talking about earlier is that parents don't need to be like Bible scholars or experts to begin to teach their kids apologetics. And I know that usually we're pretty encouraged by what, if we attend our local church, we're pretty encouraged by what our kids learn. For instance, if your church has Sunday school or some kind of teaching time and, you know, our kids are learning Bible stories in that time. But usually it's not, like you're saying, the cosmological argument or the teleological argument or something when they're learning the basic Bible stories. So what are ways that we can build upon what they learn in Sunday school or they hear at children's church that would have an apologetic focus?
Right. It's unfortunately true that, you know, churches overwhelmingly are not focusing on apologetics, especially at the elementary age. But that doesn't mean that we can't utilize that. And kids are learning important stories from the Bible. But when they come home and we want to build on that, we first of all talk to them about, you know, what did you learn this week? What story are you focusing on? But if you've taken the time to get yourself equipped in the area of apologetics, again, not an expert, but just enough understanding that you can identify how these Bible stories tie into apologetics topics, then it actually becomes quite easy to build on to that. So just to give you a couple of examples, let's say with Easter coming that your kids are talking about the resurrection at church. Well, I remember, and this will always stay with me, when I was first getting into apologetics and learning about it because I was getting attacked on my own blog several years ago. And, you know, somebody came in, left a message for me, a comment on the blog, and he said, you know, I know from science that dead people stay dead, so I know the resurrection didn't happen. And, you know, I had been a lifelong Christian, but yet I still didn't really know how to answer that. It seemed like it would have an easy answer, but I still wasn't sure what to say. So even from something as simple as this, we can say to our kids, so we're learning about the resurrection. Why do you think that Christians believe that Jesus could come back to life? You know, have you ever seen someone come back to life? Obviously, they're going to say no, or probably say no. So why would we believe that's true? Why do we believe when we know people die, they stay dead, that they can come back to life? And that's an opportunity to talk about miracles. And what is a miracle exactly? And the fact that we are talking about a supernatural resurrection, not a natural resurrection. This is something that happened because of God, not because of the workings of the natural world. So that's something that's a very easy but important tie-in so that kids can start to understand that. Another example that I can think of is, you know, kids learn about Joshua and the Battle of Jericho. That's kind of a Sunday school favorite. But you know, for Christians, the kids learn about it and they sing songs about it and they go around the room and they're blowing trumpets and things like that. But for skeptics, it represents something very different. It represents that God commanded the Israelites to go in and wipe out the Canaanites, and that this is a genocidal kind of action on God's behalf. So if our kids are learning about Joshua, perfect opportunity to say, hey, that I'm glad you're learning about Joshua. That was a really important part of the Bible. But why do you think that God commanded the Israelites to go in and have this war against the Canaanites? Is that the same thing as someone today saying that we should go have war against someone? Why do you think that God could do that? Was that a bad thing of God to do? All of those questions are just taking the same questions that a skeptic would ask an adult, but they're making them in a kid-friendly way to help them to think through those. And they should think through those even at that kind of age. So yeah, when kids come home from church, find out what they're learning about. And there are so many questions that you can raise to help them process that at a deeper level based on your own apologetics knowledge.
And I know a lot of times parents, as a parent myself, that, you know, like we were saying earlier, they're not sure if their kids can grasp stuff, but you were mentioning Easter and the resurrection. And I remember probably because I work in apologetics, you know, that I've always been, you know, intentional with my own kids about it. But when my oldest child was in first grade at their Christian school in California, they were supposed to draw a picture of that represented Easter. And his was the only one that was, it looked like, I was like, what is this? Is this a black hole? And he said, no, Mama, that's the empty tomb, you know? So he was grasping what we were talking about. And his was the only picture that was like that of the class. People drew other things that they thought Easter was about, but no one drew the empty tomb. And so it was just over time, you know, you just wonder, is there any understanding? They're only in first grade, but there actually is probably more than we think. Well, one thing I like to ask you about is different tools that parents can use as they try to engage their kids with apologetics, little ones. And one idea that you've talked about is that you suggest playing logic games with young kids. Can you explain what these logic games are and why it's helpful for teaching apologetics to that age group?
Yeah, this is something that I kind of just fell into doing with my kids that has just helped their thinking in so many ways. And as far as logic being important to apologetics, our kids, when we teach them about challenges to Christianity and we talk about these subjects, they're not going to always encounter them in nice, tidy packages, you know, where someone says, how do you know that God exists? You know, a lot of times that's going to come in a whole package of rhetoric from someone. And so it's important that our kids learn to think well, that it's not just about building a case or defending faith, but they can actually think well and draw good conclusions from arguments or spot bad conclusions. And so this idea came about because when my daughter was maybe 4 or 5 years old, she was just the queen of bad logic. You know, she would say things like, and every parent has experienced this, but I could ask her, you know, where are your shoes? And she says, they're nowhere in the house. And you say, well, how do you know that? I looked in the living room. And like I said, every parent has experienced that kind of logic with their kids, but you can actually capitalize on this because when your kids use that kind of bad logic, it's an opportunity to say, hey, what you just said, is that good logic or bad logic? If my shoes, and you rephrase the argument, you say, if my shoes are not in this room, that means they're nowhere in the house. Is that good logic or bad logic? And if you have other kids in the family, they'll be more than happy to point out when that's a bad logic example. And it's just an opportunity for everyone to see, you know, let's draw good conclusions from what we're doing. And so as I started pointing this out to the kids, they actually asked me on the way to school, hey, can you give us examples of bad logic and good logic for us to guess? And so I started doing things like, you know, okay, God, I cannot see God. That means he doesn't exist. Good logic or bad logic? And that's just a very simple example, but they would say bad logic. And I'd have to ask them, okay, well, explain to me why. And from there, they can explain, well, there are lots of things that we can't see, but we know that they exist. You can give them examples of good logic too. You know, if you're going outside and it is very icy, you should not run on the ice, good logic or bad. obviously that's good logic. And so I give them all these kinds of challenges, and we've been doing this now for probably 4 years, and we still play this because they find it interesting to kind of figure out, is that good logic or bad logic? And I give them more advanced examples now. But it's helpful too, especially with kids who aren't necessarily interested in some of these conversations, because it gets them to think. And you can use examples that have nothing to do with faith that are just about logic, and they learn how to think well, and that's going to serve them later. And an example of that kind of question would be, you know, if Mary says 2 + 2 = 1 and John says 2 + 2 = 4, that means there's no right answer, good logic or bad logic. Well, that's an example of bad logic, because just because people disagree doesn't mean that there's not one right answer. That wasn't about faith at all, but you can see the application to faith and the question of what is an objective truth and a subjective truth later. So it's been very powerful for our kids, and just learning how to think well and to spot good and bad logic. And so I really recommend doing something like that, because kids find it interesting and it will serve them very well later.
I know another tool you've talked about that you've used in your own family is what you're calling Questions Night. And so what is Questions Night? How does it work? And again, how does that help in teaching younger kids apologetics?
So a questions night, it really, and if you're listening to this and you're looking for the lowest hanging fruit, where can I start without having to know a ton, I would say it's right here. And this is just getting your family together, setting aside time and saying, hey, tonight is what we are going to call a questions night. And we're going to have these on a regular basis, maybe once a month. And we just want to hear any questions that you have about God, Jesus, faith, the Bible, anything you want to ask. There's no bad question. And we're just going to discuss any of these kinds of questions that you have. And these questions nights have been so effective for our family. And I recommend this all the time. And people have come back and told me, oh my gosh, this has been the source of the best conversations for us, because it gives your kids an opportunity to just talk about what's at the top of their minds. And I would say, and I've encouraged people to do this through my blog also, and come back and say, what is it exactly, you know, that your kids are asking? And I would say 99% of the time, kids will ask questions. And sometimes parents go into it thinking, well, what if my kids don't ask questions? And then they always find that they do have the questions. And the reason that this helps with apologetics is that in a world where kids are starting to hear a lot of challenging things, things that are different than what they hear from their family, what they hear at church, and they start to process these things, they kind of store them up in their heads. And they might not necessarily come to mom and dad and say, hey, somebody at school, you know, said this about the Bible or said this about the God. And they might not do that on their own for a lot of reasons. But if you set aside the time, it tells your kids, this is a safe place to ask your questions. In our home, we don't fear any kinds of questions. We are so convicted of the truth of Christianity that we know that there's nothing to fear. And we want to answer any questions that you have. And that kind of environment says so much to your kids, so that as they're growing, they'll know that you welcome and embrace their questions and that you want their questions. And so many of the questions they'll ask will have something to do with apologetics also. And so it's a great opportunity to build that in.
But what about parents that might feel discouraged or troubled if their kids aren't interested in having any spiritual conversations, and they just kind of don't have no interest? It seems like they have no interest in apologetics at all, even if they're small. What do we do about that situation?
I think a lot of parents do feel like their kids are not interested in having these conversations. So I think that this is a common question that people have. I think one of the first questions to ask yourself if you're in that position is to say, why aren't my kids interested in these kinds of conversations? You know, is it because they just simply would rather do something else because it's not fun? Is it because maybe they're already having doubts about God and what they hear at church, and so they don't really think that this is true, so they don't want to talk about it anymore? Is it because they don't see the importance of talking about God because they believe in God and they pray to God? Why do I need to talk more about God? So really trying to get to the bottom of that will help you to determine what you can do to get them more interested. So in the case of a child, for example, who just doesn't think it's fun, and it's not that they're having doubts, it's not that, you know, they don't care, it's just that it's not fun. Well, the the solution there is to make it more fun. And it doesn't have to be like these boring conversations where you sit down and you say, we're now talking about apologetics. Let's now go through the minimal facts argument for the resurrection. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. I'll give you one example of how we kind of turning things into games works all the time because it gets kids interested and they do want to kind of take the challenge of answering those things. So we were going through the first chapter in my book, which is, you know, what can we learn about God from nature? That's the name of the first chapter. And it talks about how atheists and theists can all look at the same evidence, but they have different interpretations. And that's always going to happen because that's the nature of human interpretation when the evidence doesn't speak for itself. And so in that chapter, I talk about the difference between best explanations for evidence, possible explanations for evidence, and impossible or extraordinarily unlikely explanations. So you can have that basic conversation with your kids and, you know, they would probably get it, but you can make it a lot more fun if you turn it into a game. So what we did was I would come up with different kinds of examples. Like, you know, you walk outside right now and you see that there's a kite in the tree. I'm going to give you three possible explanations for the kite being there. And you guys figure out what is the best and the possible and the extraordinarily impossible or impossible explanation. And then you can give them things like someone lost a kite and it flew into the tree. And then another explanation might be that that mom was really interested in putting a kite in the tree that day and decided to do that. Another one that a kite actually grew out of the tree. And then they can have the fun of figuring out which one of those explanations fits with which one of those likelihoods. And they love doing that. In fact, my daughter wanted to start coming up with other kinds of examples to give us. And kids are built differently. Somebody might be listening to this and going, you know, my child wouldn't even think that's fun. But it just depends on what your child's into. One other example is my son loves Rubik's Cubes and he's 9 now. So this is a little bit more advanced, but we were talking about the moral argument a couple of weeks ago, and he just came to me the other day, and he had seen a YouTube video he's watching with my husband where they were looking at an all-black Rubik's Cube. And he came to me and said, I think I can see how this is like the moral argument. He said, if the Rubik's Cube is all black, then the moves don't matter. And that's like in atheism, that it doesn't matter what you do. It's just a matter of your opinion, which way you go. But if the squares now have colors on them, then and there's an objective to it, then now there's a pattern that you're supposed to meet. And that's like in a world with God, where he is the standard for our morality. And I just thought, wow, that's a great example. And it's tied to something that he's interested in. So there are all kinds of ways to make these kinds of conversations relevant to your kids. It just takes a little creativity to understand, okay, why aren't they interested? Because that's the problem you want to troubleshoot, and then to find things that do make it relevant.
So what should parents do if it seems like even at a young age, their little kid says, well, I'm not sure if God exists, or I'm not sure if the Bible is true? How should they handle some of those situations, like you were saying at the Christian school, even where your children attend, even on the playground, people have said, well, God doesn't really exist, or I don't believe in God. So how do we handle that when we hear about those things, or when our child tells us they have doubts?
I think the most important thing that we can do, and this is with a child of any age, is to ask a lot of questions to understand exactly what your child is questioning. For example, they might come to you and say, you know, little Mary on the playground says that the Bible isn't true. And maybe by telling you that, what they really want to know is how they can talk to her, because they're not bothered by that, but they want to know how to evangelize to her. And that's one kind of question. But if they're coming and saying, you know, I think that the Bible isn't true, then you want to start asking questions and say, well, how did you come to that conclusion? Why don't you believe that the Bible is true? And listen to what they're giving you, because maybe they say, for example, well, the Bible is 2,000 years old. Somebody at school said that it's so super old, so we can't trust it. So then you can have conversations about why a book being old has nothing to do. That's a bad logic example, right? That the age of a book has nothing to do with whether or not it's true. But you wouldn't know what kind of conversation to have unless you first ask the questions to really dig in and kind of be that detective to understand what your kids are saying. And, you know, sometimes it's a very specific kind of question. So a child might say, you know, I don't believe in God anymore. And if a parent, maybe someone who's well-versed at apologizing, apologetics, you know, they look at that and say, oh, well, let me tell you all the evidence for God's existence. Here's the cosmological argument, and here's all about the fine-tuning of the universe, and start rattling things off. But if you had stopped first to ask the questions and say, well, why don't you think God exists? And then they might have told you, well, because something really bad just happened to my friend's dad, and a good God wouldn't let that happen. That's a totally different conversation. That's talking about the problem of evil and suffering. And what does that say about God, or what does it not say about God? And so learning to really ask the questions without panicking, and of course, parents always want to panic. I've panicked myself about things before. We always kind of go to that. But if we just remain calm and ask the questions, then we can understand specifically what is troubling our kids so that we can get to a better solution and start talking about the right kinds of questions.
Well, you've given us a lot of ideas for parents, for sure, but there might be some parents out there saying, this is totally overwhelming. I'm not an apologist. I don't know if I can do all these different tools that she has. So how do you even start? What would be your advice to that person to just even take the plunge and start?
I think it does sound overwhelming. I think if you've, especially if you've been a lifelong Christian, you haven't encountered these kinds of things before, you maybe didn't need it yourself. And so you're wondering, you know, do my kids need this? I know that it does sound overwhelming, but I think we always have to come back to the fact that if we truly believe that Christianity is true and we're convicted of that truth, then there can be nothing more important than raising our kids to know and love Jesus. That just is the automatic priority that follows from that. It's not, well, if there's time after soccer practice and there's time after piano and all of this, then maybe we'll start thinking about this. It can't be that way. I mean, we just have to be honest with ourselves that our kids' relationship with Jesus has eternal implications. And so we have to put it first. When we do put it first, then the question is, okay, so what exactly does that mean for me as a parent? What do I need to do? And I think in today's world, there's no question that an understanding of apologetics, how we make a case for and defend the truth of Christianity, is absolutely critical, that our kids need that. And so as a parent, if your kids had a horrible disease, I can guarantee you that you would research everything and you would put yourself fully into that to figure out how to help them. And in the same way, if our priority truly is raising our kids to love Jesus, then we should put ourselves completely into what that takes. And again, the encouragement would be that doesn't mean that all of a sudden you have to be an apologetics expert. It means that you need to commit to learning more and to being intentional as a parent, looking for those teachable moments, but also creating the moments and starting small when they're young and just building those seeds as they grow older is going to give them a confident faith that they need for today's world.
And I would like to encourage parents too that it, you know, it's not like you're going to have a classroom setting or something at your home. There's a lot of, as you mentioned, you know, opportunity to just along the course of the day, doing carpool, sitting in the car with your kids is a great time to ask questions or to talk to them about spiritual things. And then at dinner time. So it's not like, you know, you have to have a special regular time that you do this. It's as you dip your toe into the water, you can definitely find those opportunities to talk to your kids. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Natasha. So Natasha, In-N-Out or Mexican food?
Mexican.
Is there a book that you're currently reading aloud to your kids?
I'm reading aloud to my kids. Well, we're actually working through my book right now with our family time, talking with your kids about God.
Do you know how to change a tire?
No.
Which Southern California freeway has the worst traffic jams?
The 5, for sure.
And the beach or the mountains?
Mountains.
Well, thanks, Natasha, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been great to be with you.
Yes, it's been great to have you on. Today's guest has been Natasha Crane. Natasha has written a feature article for the Volume 41, Number 1 issue called Kindergartners Need Apologetics Too. To read her article, please subscribe to the journal. We have a new lower subscription rate of $33.50. It used to be $39.50, and that's for a 6-issue subscription. So to subscribe online, go to equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes and rate and review our podcast. The more people that rate and review our podcast, the more people can find it. And so please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Hank is also streaming live each week on Facebook and YouTube, so please go to equip.org for dates and times. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, which is Hank's new audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.